Lessons of Camp Merryheart by Daniel B. Fry. Dan Fry is a former National Federation of the Blind scholarship winner. He is now an attorney practicing law in Washington State. One summer during his college years, he served as a camp counselor. Here's how he describes the experience. During the summer of 1988, I got a job as a senior counselor at Camp Merryheart, an Easter Seal-sponsored challenge and recreational retreat for physically disabled people in the rural outskirts of Hackettstown, New Jersey. Hoping to enhance my resume by successfully working a summer job, I left the comfortable familiarity of college life in South Carolina, boarded a northbound Greyhound, and set out on a summer adventure which promised to be exciting and instructive. In an effort to make a good first impression, I called the camp supervisor from the Greenville, South Carolina bus station and politely declined her offer to have a camp representative pick me up at the Port Authority in New York City. I explained that I was confident of my ability to make the necessary transfer to the commuter bus, which would take me directly to Hackettstown. She reluctantly resigned herself to the travel arrangements that I, her new 20-year-old blind summer employee, proposed, and we agreed to meet the next morning for staff orientation. While alone in the darkness of night on a 16-hour bus journey, which would transport me from the tranquil south to the teeming north, I had ample opportunity to entertain a range of feelings, from eagerness to apprehension. While my spirits were bolstered by the possibilities of the summer to come, I simultaneously felt the anxiety inherent in being a newly independent young adult traveling to an unfamiliar region of the country where I would assume the responsibilities of a vaguely defined summer position. I hoped that I could do the job well. I hoped that I would fit in and develop pleasant working relationships with my colleagues and the campers. And most of all, I hoped that my blindness would not be used as a justification to bar me from completely fulfilling my obligations as a staff member or represent a barrier to my participation in camp life. At some point in the wee hours of the morning, I concluded that further analysis of my emotions would be fruitless, and I drifted off to sleep, only to be awakened by the announcement, "Arriving, New York City." My transfer to the commuter bus was uneventful, and after settling into the rustic, unair-conditioned log cabin, which would be my home for the next several months, I reported to the camp dining hall for staff orientation. I was encouraged by my initial reception from the other counselors, most of whom were also college students on summer vacation. But it became apparent immediately that the camp's management did not share their faith in my ability to function as a capable staff member. Despite my certifications in CPR and advanced swimming by the American Red Cross, I was not permitted to participate in life drills, a procedure which involved four staff members, tethered equidistantly to a rope stretched across the camp lake, diving, exploring, and resurfacing together in search of a hypothetical accident victim. I protested that, in addition to being competent in swimming and first aid, I would face minimal safety risk because this operation was executed in teams of four, that we were all secured by a life rope, and that most of the underwater exploration was accomplished tactilely because of the lake's murkiness. The management decision to forbid my service as a counselor in the integrated day camp, which catered to both disabled and non-disabled campers, resulted in a second restriction on my full conduct of camp responsibilities. The rationale offered for this policy was that vision was essential to the successful supervision of the more active camping population. These and other exclusions became the norm throughout my summer employment at Camp Merryheart. I privately resolved to stick it out until my employment was scheduled to end in mid-August. Frequently, however, my spirits wavered, and I was tempted to offer my premature resignation. Ultimately, I decided that the image of blind people would be better served by my decision to stay with my employer, conducting the tasks assigned to me with efficiency and dignity, while trying to educate and advocate for improvement of management's attitudes about blindness. I reasoned that if I did my job well and used the art of diplomacy to enlighten camp leaders about my disability, I could acquit myself with distinction and preserve opportunities for any future blind candidate seeking employment with Camp Merryheart. As the days melted into weeks, I slowly settled into the established routine of camp life. Waking to reveille at 6 a.m., I helped my campers prepare for the day ahead. I escorted them to flag raising, accompanied them to breakfast, and returned with them to our quarters for morning cabin cleaning. By 8:30 a.m., we'd leave for camp exercises, field games, arts and crafts, swimming, and other traditional camping activities. Once, during every week-long camp session, we'd conduct an overnight outdoor camping excursion, complete with cooking over campfires and sleeping under the stars. Our evenings would usually conclude with an assembly of sorts, in which campers put on plays, participated in talent shows, or simply socialized with each other in the central dining hall. Lights went out at 10 p.m., and weary counselors on night call duty would quietly meet on the front porches of their cabins and talk about home, life at college, and other personal dreams, and generally spend time building friendships with one another. It was those relaxing summer evenings, long after campers had retired, that I came to cherish most. In whispers, so as not to disturb the campers, my friends and I would discuss the pros and cons of the Merry Heart experience. Sometimes we would analyze my dissatisfaction, frustration, and exasperation with the attitudes exhibited by Merry Heart leaders about my blindness. We agreed that it was unfortunate and ironic that such a lack of confidence in an independent blind person prevailed at a camp which prided itself in its belief in and support of true achievement for disabled people. Near the summer's end, I told a few of my friends of my intention to use part of my salary to explore some of the quaint towns within a several hundred mile radius of Hackettstown. Preferring the allure of New York City's bright lights, everyone to whom I had extended an invitation to accompany me for this weekend declined my offer, so I made arrangements to travel alone. Despite my educational efforts throughout the summer, a couple of my friends and a member of the camp's administration expressed some surprise and concern that I had not altered my plans once I learned that nobody else was joining me on my trip. They asked me how I thought I would manage without somebody around to orient me to my surroundings, and whether it didn't make sense to identify a specific destination so that I could have some idea of what to expect. Realizing that changing ingrained notions about blindness is always a slow process, I patiently explained that with my cane and some cash, I would be fine, and that the absence of plans was largely what made the adventure attractive. On a Friday afternoon, after all the campers had bid their farewells and the facilities were shut down for another two-day respite, I got a ride into Hackettstown, asked the ticket agent what the final destination of the New York City commuter bus was, and purchased a ticket to Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Several hours later, I was comfortably ensconced in a small hotel. Having ordered a pizza, I luxuriously stretched out across my king-size bed and contented myself watching former Texas Governor Ann Richards deliver a televised nomination speech for Democratic presidential candidate Michael Dukakis at the 1988 Democratic National Convention. Throughout the rest of the weekend, I watched movies, swam, explored the town and its history, and found other amusements with which to occupy myself. In short, I had a great time. During these days of recreational solitude, I had considerable opportunity to reflect upon the events of the summer. I smiled inwardly at the knowledge that I was growing up, and that the philosophy about blindness to which I had always subscribed really seemed to work. Having determined to visit Wilkes-Barre on a whim, I found that I was managing well, and that blindness was not much of an issue. Further, I concluded that I was actually quite satisfied with my successful performance in what could be fairly characterized as my first real job. Even when I pondered the turbulent and bittersweet aspects of the summer's experience, I realized with pride that I had been equal to the challenge, and I noted with corresponding sobriety that as I matured, it would be necessary for me to develop sophistication in effectively addressing social misunderstandings about blindness. While vacationing in Wilkes-Barre, I reaffirmed that the best way to accomplish this would be to play an active part in the National Federation of the Blind. As this contemplative weekend drew to an end, and I prepared to return to Camp Merry Heart to finish the last several weeks of my summer job, I decided with great certainty that I was glad I had come.